The Legion of the Lost by Paul Briers, with Tenniel Evans as the narrator, David Healy as Tate, Zela Clark as Nancy, Brian Murray as St. Ledger, and Maggie McCarthy as Madame.
Well, this is where it all happened. This is where they landed, right here. A day like today it was, too, very mild for February, and the sea flat as a mill pond. Karagwastad, it's known in these parts. Funny place to choose for an invasion with all these rocks and a flat stretch of sand just around the headland. But then it was a funny business. The last invasion of Britain, when the Black Legion came to Pembrokeshire and raised the standard of revolution and declared war on the property-owning classes and drank all the brandy. But perhaps I'd better establish my credentials first, because it's going to sound like a tall story and not an historical fact like it was, see? And I am not the kind of person that goes around telling tall stories, not to anyone. My name, then, is the Reverend Daniel David Rowlands, and I'm the vicar of Llanfi Angel Penabont in South Wales. Or was until very recently, but I'm retired now and thinking about setting all this down, you see, while I still remember it. And it shouldn't be forgotten, just because it was in Wales they landed and not the River Thames. But to begin at the beginning. It all started in Paris in the autumn of 1796, or, as it was known in that godless nest of rebels and regicides, year four of the revolution, the month of Brumaire. Brumaire, the month of mist. Imagine it, creeping up from the river, coldly wrapping itself round the old fortress where they kept the victims of the terror, drifting like dead leaves across the great square where the guillotine stands, solemn as a monument, sinister as a shroud. Mist piling up against the walls of the Ministry for War, muffling the sound of cannons. Or is it paperwork?
Good morning, Antoine. How goes it?
Oh, busy day, citizen. The latest dispatches from Italy are on your desk. Oh, Bonaparte wants to come home. He misses his wife.
The man is a fool. Any man who misses Josephine Beauharnais deserves flogging. More than that, he deserves to have her. Send her to him.
Nicolas Carnot, philosopher, mathematician, engineer, military genius. Minister for War, member of the ruling directorate, member of the Committee for Public Safety, organizer of victory, despiser of women.
But now I think about it, keep her here. Let him burn for her. It will urge him to victory.
Good. Oh, and General Osh is waiting to see you. He wishes to invade Ireland. He says it is his destiny.
His destiny, I see. Does he discuss this with the Irish?
Oh, he has a plan. There's a man here in Paris who calls himself Citizen Smith. His real name is Theobald Wolfe-Tone, and he's a leader of the Irish Patriots. Mm-hmm. Now, he has been talking with Citizen General Osh in Brittany, and the plan is this. Osh lands an army, Wolfe-Tone makes an uprising of the peasantry, the English, they panic and sue for peace. And there it is. Mm. Citizen General Osh is once more the hero of the revolution.
And Buonaparte eats his liver in Naples. Yes, I can see it has its attractions, Antoine. What else? Any more plans? Any more ambitious generals to give me a pain in the head?
There is also the American, the Colonel Tate.
Tate? Do I know this man?
The one who wishes to liberate the West Indies.
Oh, what, that cretin, the one who writes to me, always sends me the maps, the plans.
That is the one.
Sends me designs for a flying machine. He says we can use it to bomb London. Oh, that imbecile. He is the last man I wish to see.
It is a special request of the citizen director.
Why does Barrow want me to see an American lunatic? Is he mad too?
There is a woman involved.
Oh, there would be. There is always a woman involved when the citizen director is involved. Explain, Antoine.
Well, the citizen director was enamored for a short time of a certain Madame Jancel, who still has some influence with him. Madame is now the landlady of this Colonel Tate, and has an interest in his future prospects.
There is no end to this. Intrigues, women, pushy young officers wanting to conquer the world.
Well, to be fair, citizen, this Tate is not young. He's aged 70 years.
70? So what would Barra have me do with this ancient? Give him an army and a fleet, no doubt, and 10 million francs to spend in the West Indies.
I think the citizen director would be happy if you found a small diversion for the colonel. Mm. You will recall he was commissioned as a chef de brigade in the Army of the Republic. He's now demanding his expenses.
So what are we to do? Pay him? We have no money. Give him a brigade? Well, there have been stranger appointments. Look at Buonaparte, and he's not doing badly. Mm-hmm. Is he senile, this Tate? Has he the use of his limbs?
One limb at least is active, if he is staying at the house of Madame Janser.
Do not be vulgar, Antoine. When must I see him?
The appointment is for 11.
But first there is the General Hoche. Oh, very well, Antoine. I am prepared.
Citizen General Lazare Hoche. Another military genius. There were a lot of them about in those days, and they were nearly all French. Hoche began his career as a groom in the royal stables at Versailles, joined the National Guard, stormed the Bastille, and became first general of the Republic, though Bonaparte would dispute this. His age? 28.
Citizens, greetings! What do you think of it?
But it is marvelous, General. Perfect, is it not, Antoine?
Wonderful.
You must give me the name of your tailor.
My tailor, citizen, I do not understand. I speak only of the liberation of Ireland from the English tyrant.
Oh, forgive me, I thought it was your uniform.
All is prepared. I have an army of 20,000 at Brest. We have the support of the Irish people. Our fleet is ready for sea.
Ah, the sea, yes. It is a small point. You will forgive my mentioning it to you, General. You know how I am obsessed by the detail, but you do not feel that the British Navy will feel obliged to intervene as it is their sea, you understand?
There is a possibility, certainly, and so I have taken the precaution to create a diversion.
What did you have in mind, General?
An invasion of Wales.
Wales?
The Welsh peasantry, I have it on the most reliable authority, are on the brink of revolt. My plan is to land a small force, no more than 2,000 men, to raise an insurrection and to march on Bristol or Liverpool, whichever is the more near.
You astound me, General. And this is a diversion, you say? You do not think it makes the invasion of Ireland somewhat unnecessary?
But not at all, citizen. I expect the invasion of Wales to be a total disaster.
You do?
But while the English are occupied with that affair, I shall be landing my army on the west of Ireland.
I see.
Which do you think the English would fear to lose most, citizen? Liverpool or Ireland?
An interesting dilemma for them. And who do you have in mind to lead this diversion?
That is a problem. Bonaparte is still in Italy, I understand.
Alas, yes, I agree. He would have been most suitable. Well, who do we know? A diversion, is it not?
Citizen, you are not thinking.
Oh, but I am, Antoine. I am thinking, General, that I may have just the man for you.
Yankee Doodle, keep it up. Yankee Dandy. Evil find the music and the step and with the groovy hand. Madam, I have returned.
Colonel William Tate. Late of the South Carolina Artillery, veteran of the American War of Independence, founder member of the South Carolina Society of the Cincinnati, and commander-in-chief of the American Revolutionary Legion, was at this momentous period of history living as an impoverished exile in a house of ill repute, the guest of the Madame.
Drunk again, monsieur.
Are you, Madame? So am I.
Garçon, I break for you the head. You like that?
Madam, do not be unkind. Destiny has overtaken me.
Then it must run very fast, I think, this destiny. So long do you avoid it?
I am to command an army.
Oh, mon Dieu, is it so desperate?
There is always room, madame, for a man of my talents in the armies of the Republic.
So, you have been to see Citizen Carnot? And did you discuss the matter of your expenses?
We spoke, madame, of the fate of nations. Do not talk to me of petty cash.
It may be petty to you, monsieur, but I lend you a considerable sum of money on the promise of this remuneration. Now, does he agree to pay you?
I am confirmed in my appointment as chef de brigade. As to the previous expenses, Citizen Carnot regrets he's unable to fulfill the promise of past administrations.
Ah, Citizen Carnot regrets. Imbécile, idiot. Monsieur Tate, you are a fool. He makes of you the dupe.
Madame, they have given me an army and you talk of being duped. I am to embark upon a great adventure. Besides which, my previous exploits, historic as they are, pale into insignificance. Toinette. Cognac, if you please.
Non, Toinette. Du thé, s'il vous plaît. We will have tea, monsieur. It calms the spirits, of which you have too much already.
An exchange of correspondence. From Theobald Wolfe Tone to his aide-de-camp, Colonel Shee, November 25th, 1796.
My dear Colonel, I have been hard at work translating orders and instructions for a Colonel Tate, an American officer who offered his services to the Republic, and to whom the General has given the rank of chef de brigade, and some 1,500 irregulars in order to go on a buccaneering party in England. Excepting some little errors as to their landing point, which may be due to my own ignorance, the instructions are incomparably well drawn, and their object, the port of Liverpool. Yours truly, J. Smith.
From Citizen Carnot to the Directory, the 10th of Frémaire, or to those of a Christian disposition, the 1st of December.
Citizens, following your instructions, I have confided to Colonel William Tate the command of the 2nd Legion of Irregulars, which has been raised as secretly as possible by Citizen General Hoche from all the prisons in his district. The men are now collected in 2 jails and islands to obviate the possibility of their escape, and shackled with leg irons. They are to be equipped with British muskets and jackets captured at Quiberon, and I have given instructions for the redcoats to be dyed black. The Legion will embark in 2 frigates and a corvette and land as near as possible to the port of Bristol.
Instructions to William Tate, chef de brigade, le 2e Légion Française, from General Hoche. Undated.
In all countries, the poor are the class most prone to insurrection, and this disposition is to be advanced. 1, by inveighing against the government as the cause of all public distress. 2, by recommending and facilitating an uprising to plunder the property of the rich, whose affluence is the natural subject of envy. And 3, by distributing large quantities of money and drink.
There are your dogs, Colonel, straining at the leash.
Not the most edifying of sights, I fear. Indeed, I've seen red Indians of a more military disposition and less colorful in their attire.
The jackets are a bit of an eyeful, I will admit. The dye appears to have run a little.
Run? It's galloped, sir. It's run riot. They're every shade from bright purple to turd brown. They would have been called the Black Legion. Preposterous.
The Legion of the Lost, I've heard them called in some quarters. But I'd not be putting that forward as an alternative.
I was thinking of making them a speech. General Washington, of whom you will have heard, used to declare that a speech before battle fired a man's belly better than hard liquor.
Aye, well, I'd say this lot would rather have the drink and spare the oratory. But what did you have in mind, Colonel?
Well, I've been drafting a short peroration in the native tongue, sir, and joining them to march with me to victory or death. Mes braves, j'ai l'honneur, à vous, commander, à cette enterprise, glorious to me. What is the French for together?
Ensemble, but...
Ensemble, nous marchons en victoire ou la mort. I think they're not understood, Mr. Smith.
I think you're right about that, Colonel. But that would not be altogether surprising, them being from Ireland, do you see?
What? Are they Irish?
As the Black Fog. They've been serving with Hoche in Brittany, but volunteered to join your staff when they heard what was in the wind. Is that not so, lads? This now is Captain Tyrrell, Captain Morrison,
Lieutenant St. Ledger.
Why, upon my soul, young Barry, is it not?
It is, sir, and proud to be serving under you, sir.
Why, Mr. Smith, this young man and I are old acquaintances. His family lived for years in the same street in Charleston. Came over from the old country when he was a boy. Why, how old are you now, son?
Turned 20, sir.
Still a boy, but old enough to wear a uniform, I see. You're a long way from home, but then so am I. How did you get here, in God's name, and how in the army?
Well, it's a long story, sir, and I don't want to trouble you with it just now. It's enough that I'm of your company, sir, aye, and heading back to Ireland.
Ah, well, we'd best be on our way, Colonel. You'll have plenty of time to be better acquainted with the lads, and the Admiral's anxious to have a quiet word in your ear. The best of luck to you, lads, and may we next meet in Dublin, eh?
Mr. Smith, forgive me if I appear slow in my wits, but is not our destination the port of Bristol?
It is, sir, it is. Keep tight hold of that fact, for it's evaded me at times I don't mind admitting.
Then this talk of Ireland.
I had meant to warn you about that, Colonel, though I'd have thought the General would have told you by now. You see, we had a little difficulty in finding officers for the expedition. No reflection upon yourself, do you understand? But with the wars in Italy and Germany, there's a lot of competition at present. And the west coast of England's not a favourite place to be at this time of the year, especially if you're an Irishman. So the General thought it was as well to suggest that your destination might be a little closer to Bantry Bay than to Cardiff, do you see?
My God, sir, do you mean to tell me these men think they're going to land in Ireland?
Ah, you've a quick grasp of it, Colonel. A ruse de guerre, the General called it.
But what would they say when they find themselves in the wrong country? Hallelujah? Oh, I think not.
Well, the way the General put it, they'd be hard put to do much about it at that stage. And to be fair to the man, he did say they'd be performing a vital service for Ireland. And that's the truth of the matter, or I'd have no part in it myself.
And the rest of the men, do they think we're bound for Ireland?
Oh, no, no, no. Though, to be frank with you, they've not the faintest idea where they're going. I doubt many of them care. They're glad enough to be out of jail or pulling stroke oar on the galleys.
Monsieur Ted, do you hide from me, monsieur? Oh, what? And in that uniform, it is impossible. You have too many feathers.
Madame, what is the meaning of this intrusion? We are engaged in a military operation.
Ah, monsieur, but I think from the way you dress, it is a fate. Take for me this baggage if you can find me no servant to carry it.
Baggage? Why baggage, madam? Do you mean to go somewhere?
But certainly, monsieur. I go with you.
With me?
See how he stares, citizen. He is so amusing.
Well, madame, you cannot think to accompany me. The woman is deranged, sir. We are about to put to sea, madame. Can't instruct two women to climb back into their carriage. They're having a bad effect on the men.
Oh, I think it is a good effect they are having already, monsieur.
Do you have any idea, madame, where we are going?
The better idea than you, I think, monsieur. And the better idea of what to do when we arrive there. You do not think to keep from me this thing, do you? I am so bored, monsieur, in Paris. Why is it you have all the excitement when it is I who arrange all of it? Come, do not make any more the sun. Introduce me to the Admiral. I wish to make certain the accommodation is suitable.
Mr. Smith, be so good as to explain to this woman that this is not a pleasure cruise, but a military operation.
I'm afraid I have to be on my way, Colonel, and wishing you the very best of luck. I'll be seeing you now. You must come and visit us in Dublin after the liberation.
Come, monsieur, reconcile yourself. Instruct these mariners to carry aboard the baggage. But that uniform, monsieur, it has more ribbons than the robes of my young ladies, and the feathers also. If you are taken by the English, monsieur, they put you in the zoo.
Now, is that not a brave sight, General, to be stirring the soul? Four fine ships with a wind fair for England. And it does my heart good to see a man of 70 still keen for an adventure and stirring up revolution around him. But God in heaven, you'd have thought at his age he'd have been spared a woman of that stature.
General, I bring new orders from Paris.
Let me see. What do they want of me? Doubtless it's another piece of nonsense. An instruction as to how many mules we are to embark.
As if there were not enough in Ireland already, and all of them English.
Oh, but this is incredible. I mean, what do they mean by it?
Citizen Carnot instructs me to tell you it is a promotion, my general. A great honor and a vital service for the Republic.
Will you put me out of my misery and tell me what it is they want of you?
I am to command the army in Germany.
But what of Ireland? What of the army of the Atlantic? The invasion fleet?
For one must accept one's destiny, citizen. Germany, yes, it is a great honor. Let Bonaparte bury himself in Italy. It is a small adventure. Germany is where the fate of France, of Europe, will be won or lost.
And what of the fate of Ireland? What are we to do now?
You are to come with me, citizen, as my aide-de-camp. Ireland is not forgotten. It is written still on my heart. Your liberation is my priority.
Well, with the greatest respect to your military genius, General, I fail to see how you can be invading two countries at one and the same time. And what about the diversion?
Huh? The diversion? What is this? I do not understand.
Those poor devils in the boats out there. Huh? On their way to Wales, and thinking we're going to be coming after to take a bit of the heat off.
Oh, merde! This, I forget. We must recall them immediately.
I fail to see how you're going to do that with them halfway across the bay already.
We must send to the fort. They will make a signal. But what do we do with them in France? I think what mischief they make of themselves. No, I think if they make the mischief, it is better they make it in England or Wales. Besides, if they are bold and have the audacity, they may change the course of history. Come, citizen. We are but straws in the winds of fate and may be blown as it changes. For them, it is to Wales. For me, Germany.
I am not a great believer in the winds of fate myself, being a man of God, you understand? If anyone was making any wind around here, I would say it was the devil himself, guiding the French squadron across the English Channel, evading the vigilance of the Royal Navy, and arriving in a fine, roaring gale off the coast of Pembrokeshire, flying Russian flags at their mastheads, the better to confuse the enemy. Though the only enemy in the immediate path of these pirates was a gang of navvies, drawn mainly from the port of Liverpool, who were in occupation of a rock on the Small's Reef, engaged in building that fashionable ingenuity of the times, a lighthouse.
Sudden weather. Leave marvellous, eh? Why couldn't he wait till a sudden spring?
He wants this job finished by spring. He's got another lined up in Anglesey.
What? Oh, not another sodden lighthouse. Oh, God, I hate lighthouses. They're always on bleeding rocks in the middle of the bleeding ocean.
Well, he would be, wouldn't he, you Burke?
He should have stuck to bridges. He was doing all right with bridges. Getting better at them and all. That last one's still standing.
There's more money in lighthouses.
Oh, yeah, for the flaming bosses there is, not for us, there's not. Not if you work it out over the year with us laid off most of the winter.
Yeah, well, I don't mind that. It's like being back at sea, 6 months stuck in the middle of the bleeding ocean, and 6 months back at the pool getting bevy down the dock road.
Aye, aye. They're turning round again.
What are?
Them ships out there. They're turning round, or yeah, whatever you call them.
Oh, aye. Going about.
Don't know what they're about, if you ask me. Going about in flaming surfers.
Maybe they're lost. They're trying to get up the channel to Bristol, only the wind's too strong for them. Either way, they're making a right pig's ear of it.
Rather them than me in this weather. Hey, I suppose they definitely are lots, are they?
What are?
Them lots, out there.
Of course they bleeding are. What else do you think they are?
They're not pirates or anything, aren't they? Privateers, like.
Nah, too big for privateers, them. They're frigates, they are.
What are they? Frigates? Did you ever have any regrets about leaving the sea, Pat?
Me? Nah, give me solid ground any day, pal. Even a sodden rock like this, at least it can't sink under you.
Oh, yeah, well, sometimes I think I'd rather be on a ship instead of being stuck here going nowhere. Oh, God, I hate whales.
I've only ever seen it through the sodden mist.
Well, you ain't missed much. God, you play off it with our bonus disdain.
Hey, up. Here comes the boss.
You two still sitting on your backside?
You can't mix mortar in this stuff, Governor.
Thank you, Jeremiah. I can see that for myself. You can shift stone up from the quay, though, like the rest of the lads have been doing all morning.
Oh, yeah, well, that's labourer's work, that, Mr. Whitesides. I mean, Patrick and myself, we're craftsmen, you see.
Oh, aye. Well, I wish I could see a bit more of it. Move up, then, and let's get under the tarpaulin. I'm all standing out there, dripping wet for the likes of you. Oh, dear, just look at it, eh? Set for the day, this is. What's that out there?
It's a ship.
I can see it's a flaming ship. Man of war, too, by the look of her, eh, Patrick?
There's three of them out there, Mr. Whitesides. Three? You can't see the others for the rain. They've been trying to get round the ebb, but the wind's up against them.
We've been watching them for an hour or more. Pat says they're frigates.
Bloody sights for a frigate, that.
Yeah, well, maybe it's a big frigate.
Let's have a look through the glass, then. Bloody hell.
What's up, Governor?
It's the bloody French.
You are!
Here, look. Have a look through that. Look at them officers on the upper deck. Now, don't tell me that's our lot.
I think you're right there, Governor. They've got them big hats on with the rosettes.
Come on, let's get the boat launched.
Well, you're not thinking of going out to them.
Don't be daft, man. We've got to get across to the mainland. Get the bonfires lit. It might be the invasion fleet. Huh? Here, Patrick, run to the quay. Warn the rest of the lads and tell them to get the boat in the water. Jeremiah, come with me and help me carry the muskets.
Do you think it is the invasion, then?
I don't know, but I'm damned if I'm going to sit it out on a bit of rock waiting to find out.
Leaving these heroes for the present, let us proceed in the wake of the French squadron to the Pencaire Peninsula, where the coast of Pembrokeshire makes a fist at the Irish Sea and is not generally noticed. Here in her cosy little farmhouse, the young widow Thomas was busy contemplating the future and a marriage of convenience.
Oh, I don't know what to do for the best, Mona.
Why?
I cannot run the farm by myself, I suppose. At least so everyone is telling me. With the sheep running wild all over Pencaire and Mr. Thomas leaving so many debts for me to pay. But I wish I felt some affection towards him.
Affection, is it now? You'll be asking for a coach and horses next.
All I ask is a bit of romance in my life. Oh, is that so much?
Well, all I can say is it's a bit late now for you to be having doubts, Nancy Thomas. With the wedding feast all laid out at Rahowell and the guests invited.
I suppose you're right, Mona. And I'll have to make the best of it, like any woman. And Mr. Latimer has been a good neighbour to me since Mr. Thomas died, even if he is half English.
Aye. And it's a handsome enough house he has at Rahowell. And you will be the mistress of it. Having all the county set into tea, I shouldn't wonder.
I shall miss my little cottage and the view across the bay.
Oh, at least you'll have a fine day for it. Sea is quite calm now. Oh, look at the ships, Nancy. Over there, coming round the headland. A proper little fleet it is. 1, 2, 4 of them. It must be the Royal Navy. See the guns they got along the sides.
But never spot the Navy here.
Unless it is the smugglers they're after.
Oh, wasting their time then it is. But it was all landed and hid by morning.
The Reverend Griffiths has most of it put away in the vaults, I expect. And him preaching only last Sunday about the sin of gluttony. But Mr. Latimer will have the best of it, I shouldn't wonder.
Oh, it will be a fine feast and everyone will enjoy it except me.
Your trouble, Nancy Thomas, is that you are a dreamer. And your head is full of fairy stories, just like it was at school.
What was that?
Hey, Nancy, look. It's the ships. They're firing at them from the fort. And they've got boats in the water from soldiers. Oh, good heavens, Nancy, it must be the French.
How could it be the French? What would they be doing here?
They said there was going to be an invasion. The vicar has been warning us about it in church, telling us to pray it won't happen.
Oh, now, don't be ridiculous, Mona Williams. It'll be some sort of practice. Well, they said they'd light the bonfires if there was going to be an invasion.
Hey, now they're firing from the ships.
Oh,
see the smoke. Oh, it's the French, I tell you.
Oh,
dear God, I must get back to the children.
They're making for Caraguasta just under Trowel. See, the first boat's there already, and men jumping in the water.
Oh, Nancy, don't just stand there staring at them. Hurry, we must get away.
You take the pony and trap, Mona. I shall saddle the mare and ride over to Treowell. Mr. Latimer will know what's happening.
Oh, you must be out of your mind, girl. You'll be murdered, dragged off to the guillotine.
Oh, I cannot believe it. Is the French? Well, not here, not in Pembrokeshire. Why on earth would they come here?
History records that the French landed in Pembrokeshire on the evening of February the 22nd, 1797, choosing for their beachhead the rocky promontory of Carrickwastad on the Pencaer Peninsula, marginally closer to Bristol and to Liverpool, but rather a long way from either of these objectives. Leading the advance guard was Lieutenant Barry St. Ledger, a native of Limerick.
Spread out, men, and keep your powder dry. Don't be shooting at any of the natives now. We're on the blessed soil of Ireland, and don't forget it.
What does he say?
I do not know. He's Irish, this one.
Ireland! Oh, Ireland! Holy Mother of God!
What does he do now?
He kisses the ground.
But why?
Why do you ask me? Am I an expert on the Irish?
They are a strange people, certainly.
Avant, mes enfants! Après moi!
Oh, mon Dieu, what now?
He says we are to follow him.
Where?
We can only go up, Emile.
In the dark? But we cannot see anything. How are we to go up?
I think he means us to climb.
Don't lose sight of the man in front of you. Keep a hold of his coattails.
Can I be seen?
Mad Irish son of a whore. Does he know where he is taking us?
No, probably not. But it is better than prison, is it not?
Wow, you tell me that. First we are locked up in a stinking ship, and now we follow the mad Irishman. It rains, and soon I think someone will shoot us. Is this more better? Where are we, anyway? Do you tell me this? Mon Dieu, it is so cold. This must be England.
Ah, well, think of the fat milkmaids and the roast beef.
Think of the fat red coats. What do we do when they come? What do you say to that, huh?
If they are less than we are, we shoot them. If more, we shoot the mad Irishman and surrender. Do I have to tell you everything, Emile?
And then we are in the English shit, huh?
No, we are in the English jail. And it is more better than the French jail, I assure you.
Will you keep your voices down, you men?
This isn't a picnic we're on. Oh, look. Shh, shh, shh. There's lights ahead. Una habitazione.
Huh? What does he say?
I do not know. He always speaks in the Irish. But look, there is a house.
Shh, corporal. Corporal, pick six good men and come with me. Sergeant, you keep the rest of them here and cover us if there's any trouble. By the size of that house, there'll be English Protestants living there. You two come with me. We'll go in the back way. Stand clear. Stand clear. I'm going to shoot the lock. Oh. Come on, liberty! Hey! Viva la revolution!
Jesus, Mary, and Holy Saint Joseph.
My God, it is the roast beef.
Well, just look at that. Holy Mother of God, I haven't seen a feast like that in the whole of Ireland. It's like being back in America again.
Emile, take the beef. I will secure the wine. Oh, my God, look, it is the good French brandy.
Mon Dieu, and the peace bond English ale. Give me the mug of that to wash my mouth out. Oh, my God, but this beef is good.
That is the ham, Emile. This is the beef.
Now, you men, stop that. I won't have any plunder.
What does he say?
Come away from that, blast you. Put that down. Now, I'll shoot the next man I see looting.
Why does he point the gun? Is he going to shoot us?
How can he shoot? He has shot the only bullet at the door.
Perhaps we shoot him. Where is my gun?
Monsieur, c'est la libération, n'est-ce pas?
What are you saying?
He understands this cretin. Shoot him, Marcel.
Get behind him.
Monsieur,
votre pistolet, s'il vous plaît. Et votre épée aussi.
No idea.
Take his sword, Emile.
Oh, no, this is mutiny. Now, I'll have you all shot. Corner!
Take care where you march, Monsieur Tate. This is a bog we are in.
At least you are mounted, madame, an advantage which the rest of us do not at present enjoy.
You call this a mount, this stupid beast?
They say Bonaparte crossed the Alps on the back of a donkey, madame, when he invaded Italy.
But he has not the misfortune to be led by one also, monsieur.
If you are of a mind to complain, madame, I will have one of my grenadiers lead you back to the cliffs to await my return.
Yes, and I wait a long time, no? No, thank you. With my young girls making a great noise and saying they wish to return to Paris, me, I will stay with you. Oh. You find yourself a warm house, I think, and stay there while we freeze to death.
That is not my intention, madame. It is said that a good general must first see to the comfort of his troops, then his horses, then himself.
Yes, if I had one sou for every good general who tells me this over a bottle of good claret, I am not short of the petit confort myself.
Besides, I wish to inspect the deployment of the front line.
And do you find it, this front line, before the dawn? I think not, me. I can see no more than a meter in front, and that is all bog.
I had thought of sending you forward as a scout, madame, but I regret that wiser counsels prevail.
It seems you have need of a scout, monsieur, as we do not even know which country it is.
You may be in some confusion as to our whereabouts, madame, but I assure you I have the geography of the entire area engraved upon my mind.
Well, as it is all bog and mist, I agree. That is a possibility, monsieur.
I have led frontiersmen into the wilderness, madame, and can do the same for you.
That is what I fear, monsieur. So, where are we? Or is this the big secret?
We are in the Principality of Wales, to our left above a small range of hills is the town of Fishguard. To our right, though somewhat further afield, the town of Pembroke. Directly ahead is the village of Landois.
This means nothing, monsieur. Where then is Bristol? That is the important thing.
Bristol, madame?
Bristol, monsieur. Our objective.
I believe you are aware, madame, that the admiral was not able to approach Bristol because the wind, as he put it, was in the wrong quarter.
So he abandoned the air in the middle of nowhere.
He was conscious that having successfully evaded the Royal Britannic Navy during the passes from Brest, his luck might change before long, and was anxious, therefore,
to run away back to La Belle France, tout sweet. Ah, oui, this I understand very well.
Understand only this, madame. We are here now, and in the words of General Washington,
if I hear any more the words of General Washington, I get down from this donkey and make of you the box of the ear. I think you and the General Washington together, you bore the English out of America.
Monsieur le Colonel, maison en droit, occupée.
What does he say?
There is a house ahead of us.
Then will you be so good as to instruct the sergeant in your native tongue that we are to advance upon this objective with fixed bayonets, as it may be occupied by the enemy. What is that noise I hear?
It is a singing, monsieur.
Singing, is it? In what language? Can that be Welsh?
No, it is the French, and not very gentil. I think this is a front line. Fine.
Help me! Quiet!
What is this? Lieutenant, are we under attack? Where's your command?
Colonel, is that yourself, sir? Oh, thank God. They've all gone mad with the drink, sir. They've taken me sword and pistol they have, and all of them drunk as the aristocracy.
What is this?
It's the English cavalry, God help us.
Form a square!
Sir. Wait! I think there is only one horse.
Mortimer, is that you?
Take aim!
Arrêtez-vous, imbécile! It is a woman, and she is alone, I think.
What's going on here? Warmix, steady girl, here.
Seize that horse, Lieutenant.
Sir!
What are you doing? Who are you? Let go, sir!
Yeah, catch hold of her arm, someone. Oh, before she does me an injury.
Oh, monsieur, hold for me the donk. I will take her.
Oh, my God! Is it the French? Help!
We bring you freedom. Equality. Oh, my God, will someone take that bloody whip off the woman?
Please, to leave the speech to Colonel Tate, monsieur. He makes more practice of it. Calm down, if you please, madame. Oh, it goes bad for you.
Don't shoot, please. I am alone. I'm getting down.
Come, let us go inside the ark so we can see more better.
Oh, where I'm gonna
I tried to stop them, Cardinal, but they took one look at the food and the drink, and it was like an Irish priest at a wake.
Oh, just look at the place. Monsieur Nardin was so nice and tidy.
Attends, cochon. Only sad, cochon. Monsieur, exert your authority.
Recover your sword, Lieutenant, and stand guard over the barrels. Sir. There may be a drop left in them.
Animal! Sauvage! Sale
bête! I stab a bottle of claret, Daryl. My God, it is. Gently, madame. Don't break their heads more than is strictly necessary. I may need them to fight the English.
Allez, allez, dans la cour avec les autres cochons.
Well, this is excellent wine. I've not tasted better in Paris. Cut me a piece of that cheese, Lieutenant, if you be so good. And a slice of ham.
By God, she's a formidable woman with a frying pan.
Sons of pigs, put that bottle down, monsieur. I make you suffer for it.
It is for the prisoner, my dear, to help her over the shock she has had.
Tell me, girl, are you Irish or English, Catholic or Protestant?
Why, I'm Welsh, sir. A nonconformist.
Welsh, is it? Holy God. Is it not bad enough that we have to have the English Protestants over here and the Scots Presbyterians carving up Holy Ireland? Now we're to have the thieving Welsh as well on our backs.
Lieutenant, I would be grateful if you would follow those men out of the door and keep an eye on them and see to the wounded now that Madame has finished running amok amongst them.
And send back a cart for my young ladies, monsieur. They will be more comfortable here, I see.
Sir! Madame, this is to be my headquarters. I will not have you turning it into a bawdy house.
Do not speak to me about the bawdy house, you. When you're soldiers, they make up with the pigsty.
Now, what have you done with Mr. Latimer? Have you killed him?
Mr. Latimer, the name is a stranger to me, ma'am.
He is the master here, whose house you are in.
Ah, then I am the poorer for not knowing him, for he keeps an excellent claret. My instructions are to confiscate the goods and chattels of all men of property and redistribute them among the poor.
Pirates, then?
Pirates, upon my soul. You see before you, ma'am, a tribune of the people and a chef de brigade in the French army.
My goodness.
Oh, I agree. It is an absurdity, madame. But the world is mad at present, and they put all manner of lunatics in uniform.
I cannot believe it. I mean, just look at the place invaded and the revolution here already.
Rejoice, ma'am. Your liberation is at hand. I take it you are Welsh. Oh. Man the barricades! It is the counter-revolution!
Sir, they fell more drink in the barn, and they're shooting at the hens and the ducks and the geese and anything they can find that they think will go down well with a drop of the hard stuff.
Go on, stop them, monsieur. You lose everything without the discipline. Go! Tout suite!
But what would you have me do, madame? Drunk as they are, they may take me for the enemy.
I think it is more possible to take you for the goose with the feathers you have in your hat. Out! Out, ambassador! Pardon! I will speak to the prisoner. Go! So, I regret the make of this a pig house, madame, but it is the nature of men, is it not? To be like pigs always, and more when they are drunk. My name is Madame Jancel. How do you do? I am the associate of Monsieur le Colonel. And you, madame, what is your name and what do you do here?
My name is Mrs. Thomas, and I was to be wed to Mr. Latimer in the morning, only now you have gone and interfered with all the arrangements.
Ah, Madame Thomas, I regret we spoil for you the big day. But that is war. Eh! Excuse me. One of the cochons looking at us through the window, but I think that does not please him. You do not wish to take the chance with the mob, as we discover in Paris. I carry my own pistols. So, you are to be the wife of Mr. Latimer? I do not favor the marriage made. It makes only for the profit of the man and of women the fool.
Oh, I cannot believe this is happening to me. Invaded. Everybody said we must be on our guard against it. We didn't think it would happen here. We're not in Pencaire. Is this the only place that is invaded, or is it happening all over the country?
Monsieur le Colonel calls that a military secret, so I cannot tell you. Besides, it is me who asks the questions. Now, we know only that your name is Madame Thomas, and you are to be married to this Mr. Latimer, who is the local seigneur, yes?
Oh, no, you couldn't say that about Mr. Latimer. He is almost a gentleman, if you see what I mean. Only his mother is Welsh, see, and that prevents it.
This I understand. Monsieur Tate has the same difficulty as he is an American. Only for him it is more of a problem. So, where is he, this man who is almost a gentleman?
I don't know, I'm sure.
Perhaps he goes to join the army and comes to rescue you. But where is the army? It is very late coming here. Is there a garrison in this town? What do you call it? Fils garde?
I don't think I should tell you that. You've been the enemy and all, but I think you'll find out soon enough. And then I think you'll be very sorry you ever came here.
The defense of South Wales was entrusted to a volunteer militia known as the Fencibles, the Fish Guard contingent of which was a sight to stir the patriot breast. Their uniform consisted of a red and white striped jacket, white breeches, and a slouch hat with a leek thrust through the rim above a badge on which was inscribed the words, "Ich Dien." At precisely the same time as Colonel Tate arrived at his headquarters, a detachment of these brave lads was marching along the beach from Fishguard, eager for battle, when their commanding officer, an Englishman called Colonel Knox, arrived on horseback, still in his evening dress, fresh from a ball at the house of Mrs. Harris of Tregwint.
Well, Jupiter, well! Sergeant, where are you taking these men?
Company! Halt! Jack, well, I thought I would take them to fight the French, sir, that have landed on the other side of the bay like. But now you are here, I expect you would like to make the lads a speech, would you, sir, before we go into battle?
Battle? Battle? By God, sir, do you have any idea of how many of them there are?
Well, no, I don't believe I do, sir.
There's a whole army of them. I met Latimer of Trehowl on the road to Haverford West, fleeing for his life. He says the cliffs are crawling with them. And how many are we?
73, sir. And two of them I'm not counting, seeing as we picked them up at the Royal Oak in passing, and they are sleeping off the drinks, sir, in the field wagon.
Dear God, you must be out of your mind. Why, we're fewer than a full company, man.
Well, shall we march back to Fishguard, sir, and prepare to defend the town?
Let me think. Steady, Jupiter, steady, sir. No. No, we'll only be cut off, and the fort is in bad repair. We must take the road south and wait for reinforcements to come up from Cardiff.
Oh, the men won't like that, Colonel. Oh, no, sir. Well, they've got their families in Fishguard, most of them.
I can't help that, Sergeant. Our country comes before our families at a time like this. There could be other landings all along the coast. We can't take any chances. We must husband our resources. Turn the men about and hurry.
Sir, company, headbound, sir. And I do not want to hear any whinging and whining. The colonel is here now, and he says we are marching south. Now then, company, shoulder, hop, forward, march.
Colonel Thomas Knox was not a military genius, nor was he a fool, which was unfortunate for him on both counts, as the decision of either a fool or a military genius would likely have been to opt for immediate attack, a strategy which, executed bravely upon a drunken, indisciplined rabble carousing in various degrees of inebriation in a number of scattered farmsteads, might well have secured a spectacular victory and his undying fame. As it was, he found himself accused of cowardice, court-martialed, cleared but deprived of his command, and confined at the end of his days in an asylum, convinced that he was a Duke of Wellington. Such is the fate of many a wise man. Oh, but I am leaping ahead. At Trehowl Manor, another discussion of military strategy was in progress.
God, will you listen to them? They've been firing at them poor hens for the past 10 minutes, and there's only one of them been hit, and that was a duck. If they shoot like that at the English horse Protestants, we may as well pack our bags and go back to France.
The English do not rush about like domestic fowl, sir. In my wide experience of the breed, they invariably stand still in a straight line and permit you to take a proper aim. It's one of their few endearing qualities.
Oh, I've heard they're the very devil with the bayonet, sir.
The lesson of that, my boy, is to keep outside bayonet range. When you see the whites of their eyes, open fire. If they keep coming at you, head for the nearest forest. It was tactics like that, sir, that won us America.
Oh, it's lucky we are, sir, to have a man of your experience leading us, Colonel. But listen, there's a question I've been wanting to ask you since we stepped off the boats.
And what is that, Lieutenant?
Well, I wonder if you could tell me where the devil it is we are.
I am surprised at your ignorance, Lieutenant. You mean to tell me you have no idea of our location and you, a native of Limerick?
Oh, well, I do know for a fact, sir, that we're sitting behind a wall now with a heap of muck around us in the middle of a farmyard, having bits knocked out above our heads like it was a demolition gang turned loose on the place. But that's not much of a help to me sense of direction, sir.
See here, Lieutenant. Do you have a map?
Not Witness, sir, no, not at the moment. No, I do not.
No matter. I will sketch it out for you in the dirt with the point of my sword.
I shouldn't be standing up, sir. Not with all them feathers you have in your hat.
I will remain unharmed, provided it is me they are aiming at. Now, see here. This is our present position. And there is Dublin.
Ah, that's Dublin. I see. And which is north and which is south?
That depends, Lieutenant, on where the sun is.
Ah, I see. Well, that's a great help to me. Thank you for taking the trouble.
Not at all, Lieutenant. It's what I'm here for. Can I interest you in a drop of Mr. Latimer's excellent cognac? I took the precaution of securing a bottle against the time of deprivation.
Oh, thank you, Colonel. That's very kind of you. Tell me, though. We are on the west coast of Ireland, are we?
A good deal closer to Dublin than that, Lieutenant. But put your trust in me, sir, and I'll not fail you.
Oh, I appreciate that, sir. But it's just that I'd have thought that we'd have seen a bit more of the local peasantry by now. You don't think that we've scared them all away, do you? With the roaring and the ranting the lads have been doing about the place.
Well, that may well be the case, Lieutenant. Indeed, you may find that there are very few Irishmen remaining in these parts. And if you do meet any, treat with extreme caution, sir, for they may be in the pay of the enemy and seek to confuse.
But what about the uprising, Colonel? How are we to manage that if we don't meet with any Irishmen?
But I am confident, sir, that when we raise the banner with the Liberty Tree device, they will flock to us in their thousands. Now, let me explain to you our future strategy.
Oh, I'd be grateful for that, sir. Indeed, I would.
As soon as it is safe to do so, you return to the beachhead, Lieutenant, and bring up the bulk of the army.
Sir!
You will march them inland as far as that hill you see before you.
That one?
That hill there. And then you will climb it.
You mean to the top, sir?
You have it, Lieutenant. And when you get to the top, dig in. Can you do that for me?
Oh, God, I can do that all right. And then what are we to do after that?
Well, then, sir, you wait for the British Army. The British Army, you will discover, can never resist a hill with the enemy upon it. Whenever they see a hill with the enemy upon it, in an apparently impregnable position, they invariably attack.
And this is to our advantage, is it, sir? Or is it not?
Why, of course it's to our advantage, Lieutenant. I anticipate a considerable setback to British arms, thus providing all the encouragement necessary for a popular revolution.
Oh, right then, right. There's a bit of a lull in the violence out there, Colonel. Would you say that they've used up all of their powder already?
Either that or all the fowl, sir. Indeed, I think I smell the aroma of roast chicken in the air. Go, sir. Take all the men you can find that are sober. Oh, and if you encounter a cart containing Madame's young ladies, kindly direct them elsewhere.
Sir!
They say that an army marches on its stomach. And whatever else they may have been lacking in military prowess, this was one lesson the men of the Black Legion had learned from the cradle. Within hours of the landing, there was not a chicken, nor a pig, nor a sheep on the peninsula of Penkire that was not turning on a spit.
Mets donc plus de beurre et mille, s'il te plaît, sur le poulet.
Vive la révolution, hein, Marcel?
The trouble with Frenchmen, I've noted, is that they tend to speak to one another in French, especially when they're excited. But let me endeavor to translate for you the following exchange.
Ah, ça dépend, Émile, ça dépend. Dis-moi, quel est le système politique que tu préfères, hein?
We are witnessing here a political discussion. Marcel is desirous of knowing what political system his comrade prefers.
Alors, anarchie, hein?
Anarchy, says the rogue.
Tu as tort, Émile. Hmm?
You are wrong, Émile, says Marcel.
Toi, bandit de grand chemin, tu as besoin d'ordre dans la société.
As a highwayman, you require order in society. Hmm? Not a great deal, but enough to give you an advantage over the ordinary law-abiding citizen. For you, the perfect system is a property-owning democracy. And where does one find this utopia?
Eh bien, en Amérique, bien sûr.
In America, naturally.
It is
a country with much possibilities for the criminal classes.
Et toi, Marcel, quel est ton état parfait, hein?
And you, Marcel, what is your perfect state?
Bien, parlant comme Macron et pourvoyeur de littérature pornographic?
Well, speaking as a pimp and purveyor of pornographic literature with a financial stake in the black market, I would say that England has much to recommend it. Though I have high hopes of France under the Directory. Both countries are run by a corrupt, inefficient oligarchy with the tacit support of an affluent bourgeoisie whose prime concern is to make money at the expense of others. I would fit in there very well, I think. I might even end up running a chamber of commerce.
Quel système politique devrions-nous détester, Marcel?
And what political system should we abhor, Marcel?
Le socialisme, Emile.
Socialism, Emile.
Voilà,
this is the enemy of the criminal classes. First, it abolishes property, then theft. We must be vigilant always against the advance of socialism.
Tu es une bonne crapule, Marcel. Tu iras loin.
You're a plausible villain, Marcel. You should go far.
Je me vois comme maire de Marseille d'ici
quelques années. I anticipate, Emile, that within a few years I shall be maire of Marseille.
Si on s'en sort vivant, hein?
If we come out of this alive.
Ne sois pas pessimiste, Emile. Regarde les choses en rose.
Do not be a pessimist, Emile. Look on the bright side.
Et où le soleil, hein?
Where's the sunshine?
Il n'a pas arrêté de pleuvoir
depuis que nous sommes arrivés. Since we arrived here.
Ça me confirme que nous sommes dans les îles britanniques.
This convinces me that we are in the British Isles.
Et alors? Et ça, c'est une bonne chose, Marcel?
And this
c'est
is a good thing, Marcel?
D'être heureux, ça?
This is a reason to be cheerful?
Il y a un petit risque, je te l'accorde.
There's a small risk, I grant you, of being shot.
Mais il est plus probable
it's more likely we should be taken prisoner.
Merveilleux.
Marvelous.
Mais j'ai un plan.
But I have a plan.
Continue.
Continue.
Il y avait un certain nombre d'aristocrates en prison avec
there were a number of aristocrats in prison with us, were there not? Where are they now, do you think?
Assis entre les bouses de vache, en train de faire griller.
Sitting among the cow turds, roasting chickens.
Exactement, Emile.
Precisely, Emile.
Maintenant, écoute.
Now listen.
Toi et moi, nous
avons you and I both have a good education.
On parle relativement bien.
We are reasonably spoken.
Alors, nous pas
practiced in the art of duplicity and general chicanery.
So,
are we not as well equipped as any aristocrat? Are not the English notoriously gullible when it comes to telling the nobility from the common thief and the cutthroat?
C'est vrai. Et alors?
This is true. What of it?
Eh bien, Monsieur le Vicomte.
Well, Monsieur le Vicomte.
Accompagnerez-vous Monsieur le Baron avec un verre de Bordeaux?
Will you join Monsieur le Baron in a glass of claret?
À la restauration.
To the restoration.
Vive le roi.
Long live the king.
Oh, mon Dieu. Voilà le fou d'Irlandais. Qu'est-ce qu'on fait maintenant, Marcel?
My God, here comes the mad Irishman. What is the plan now, Marcel?
Tu as une bouteille vide à portée de la main droite, Emile.
There is an empty bottle at your right hand, Emile.
Envoie-lui à la tête.
Throw it at his head.
I can smell something burning. Have they set fire to the place?
No, I think only they roast the chickens.
Oh, when Mr. Latimer was telling me only last week what fine layers it would work.
C'est la guerre. One day you are the fine layer, the next someone, he makes the meal of you. But he cannot care for them so much, this Mr. Latimer, or for you, madame. Or he does not run away without you, no?
Whatever do you mean by that?
I think he abandoned you.
Oh.
It is the nature of man. So, this farm over the hill, you are the owner of it? How is that?
They belonged to my father, and he left it to me when he died. Well, then I got married to Mr. Thomas, so it belonged to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now it'll belong to Mr. Latimer, if there's anything left of it after the soldiers have finished. Why do you want to know, anyway?
Only because I am curious, that is all. It is not a military secret I am after.
Well, you're going to laugh at the way I speak, I'm sure. Some people would think your accent very amusing and all.
What do you mean, amusing? I speak the English very well. My mother was English and of a very good family.
Oh, then why are you going around with French people and Americans then, eh? And a revolutionist as well.
Then why is it you wish to be married if you own your own property? Hey, are you in love with him?
I don't see what business it is of yours.
Oh.
Oh, I am sorry. I don't mean to be impolite. You must know I'm not. Well, people say it's only right to have a husband round the place. And I might as well marry a farmer if I want to make a proper job of it. I'm hardly going to marry a prince, am I? Or a pirate or someone romantic like that. Not around here, anyway.
I do not understand why you must marry anyone. Is it so big a problem to run this farm yourself?
No. At least I don't think so. But everybody else says it is, and it's such an effort to be different.
It is an effort to stay alive sometimes, but I do not know that a husband makes it any more easy.
What have you got against husbands?
Only one thing.
What's that?
Always they are men.
Oh, well, there are a lot of worse things than marriage, in my opinion.
Name for me one of them.
Well, it's sad to think of just like that. What about death, for a start?
At least it is the end of suffering. With marriage, it is only the beginning. Listen, I have had more experience of men than you. I think. All of it very bad. Until I am 30, I think maybe it is all my fault. Then comes the revolution, and I think, no, the fault is with the men.
Well, I can't see the revolution putting it right.
No, because the men, they make a mess of that even. Mm. That is why I know I am right never to trust them. The men who think they make this revolution, they do not wish women to be equal. They stop the women from speaking in the assembly. They make fun of us for wearing the trousers. So me, I think this is not the revolution I want. This is not equality, the liberté. Only it is the fraternité. So, I let them continue with it. And I open the whorehouse.
Ooh! The whorehouse? My goodness.
Why not? Is it not more honest between the man and the whore than it is between the man and the wife, huh? Oh, and much more profitable for the woman.
But to give you a body to a man for money, it's not right. It's not moral.
The wife, she also gives her body to a man for nothing. You call this moral? You call this the morality? Me, I call it stupid.
Well, I don't think it's a very nice thing to do. I mean, all those men. Shocking. It's not very clean, either.
All the men who come to my house, they are examined first by the doctor. Mm. This I insist. First the doctor, then the young ladies. So I know they have not the pox.
Ooh.
Can you say this for the husband? No. Who is to say where he has been?
Well, all the same, I think I'd rather marry Mr. Latimer. Thank you very much.
You give to this man your body, and he take away all your property. Where is the sense in this? First he rape you, then he rob you. And you say this is a morality? I say no to this morality.
Do you sell yourself for money, then? Is that it?
Me? I am the madame. I have the head for business. My young ladies have the body for pleasure. It is a good arrangement. We make much money, enough for all of us. We make the cooperative, you understand?
Oh, yes. Well, what I don't understand is where the colonel comes in all this.
You ask me. Many times I ask myself this. Whenever I think I am finished with men, I meet another who makes of me the big fool.
But then why did you have to come here with him?
You think I let him go away and still he owes me the money? I am not that big a fool. Also, I am fatigued of Paris. I wish for an adventure. Now I do not know. Well, maybe we make a revolution here, an uprising of the peasants, no?
No.
I think you are right. The Welsh peasant, he does not rise for anything.
Well, it is true we don't like the English very much, but we don't like the French either. Oh, not that I mean to be personal.
Then maybe the English pay us to go away. If we make of you the hostage. You see, in my heart there is a revolution. In my mind, the business. This is because I am French.
You mean you'd hold us to ransom?
It is a possibility. How much do you think the English will pay for us to leave here?
Oh, I don't think they'll pay you anything. Not for South Wales.
You think they will fight? Then where are they? The English army, I do not see them. I think they have run away from us, like your Mr. Latimer.
Lest our more cynical listeners should arrive at a similar conclusion, a brief summary of the relative positions and strengths of the opposing forces would appear to be in order. Now, we left our brave lads of the Fishguard Fencibles heading south towards Haverford West under the leadership of Colonel William Knox, aged 28.
While engaged in this tactical retreat, they encountered upon the road a more substantial force of irregulars commanded by my Lord Cawdor, a man of exceptional military talents and incredible courage, but not, alas, very polite. Nor indeed was he a native of Wales.
Where in God's name are you going with yon wee regiment, Colonel?
By God, sir, I thought you'd have the bloody French dogs pinned to the beaches with their backs to the sea, and your bonny lads here up on the cliff tops pissing down on them.
Squire Campbell, as he was known humorously to his tenants, was a lowland Scot of the merchant classes and a politician of the Whig persuasion, who for his services to the Tory party and its patron King George had been raised to the earldom of Cawdor. And having purchased extensive properties in the county of Pembrokeshire, he'd been appointed colonel of the Yeomanry Cavalry, a position which made him the senior officer commanding South Wales, though not without opposition.
I think you'll find, my lord, that as colonel of the Fishguard Fencibles, I am obliged to assume the command.
The devil you are! What can you tell me that man when you're found out here with your knee breeches down to your ankles, shown off your ass to the enemy ready and near a shot fired in anger, now or even for the hell of it? Now, sir, get the tarred-featured loons you call your regiment turned about and fell in behind my lads, or by God, I'll hit a lot of you stripped, starved, bullock naked and dragged behind my horse. No.
With this stirring admonition to arms, the combined forces, totaling some 600 men, marched back towards the Penkyre Peninsula, where they encountered the bulk of the French army, 1,000 of them, dug in upon a commanding hill known in the vicinity as Cairn Gethli. A brief reconnaissance established the enemy's strength.
By God, you didn't tell me, Colonel, it was the whole army that landed here. Why, men, they're outnumbered 2-1, and they have the advantage of the ground.
Sobered by this discovery, though sobriety was not much in evidence among the ranks of the enemy, the army of South Wales embarked upon another tactical retreat, this time to the port of Fishguard, still by a curious omission of Colonel Tate, unoccupied.
You'll stay here the night and take another look at them in the morning. If anyone wants me, I'll be in the pub.
While on Cairn Gethli, the officer commanding the French vanguard made a discovery which may have changed the course of history.
Oh, mother of God! The owl Egypt's after bringing us to the wrong bloody country.
This momentous information was swiftly conveyed to the French headquarters.
Well, sir? What in God's name has given you that kind of a notion?
Because the place is full of Welshmen, Colonel, swearing blind it's their own country we're in. And I cannot see how they can be mistaken about a thing like that, seeing as how they've been living here all of their lives, most of them.
You have questioned these men closely, Lieutenant.
I have, sir.
And are you assured it is not a ruse de guerre perpetrated upon us by the enemy with a view to deluding us as to our situation? For believe me, sir, he can be devilish cunning when hard-pressed.
He'd have to be the devil himself to be populating the entire country with Welshmen at a moment's notice just to be deluding the likes of us. And signposts are at every crossroads with the letter L running riot all over the place.
Well, you astonish me, sir. I'll have to give this careful consideration.
Well, now, as to that, the lads and myself have already considered it, and we've come to a unanimous decision. We'd love to fight to the death for Ireland, but to give your life for Wales is a terrible waste of a man's potential. So we've decided to resign our commissions and respectfully request to be returned to France forthwith at government expense.
But this puts me in a very difficult situation, Lieutenant. I mean, how am I to continue the campaign without officers?
Well, it's nothing to the situation you've put us in. And with the greatest respect, sir, we cannot see how you can have made such an almighty balls of it. I mean to say, can your navigation be so errant you can lead us in the wrong bloody direction altogether? Land in the wrong country is much like the west of Ireland as a pig's trotter to a pint of stout.
The navigation was the responsibility of the French admiral who has now deserted us, taking his fleet with him, and so making the matter of your return to France fraught with considerable difficulty.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. My God, are we to be stranded here till the bloody English soldiery are upon us?
No. What we'll do is, we'll steal a boat if we have to and sail across the water to Dublin.
Now, let's not be hasty, Lieutenant. It may be true that the folk in these parts are not Irish, but they are honest working men, and in my wide experience, I have not heard of an honest working man who is not disposed to rebellion when encouraged with a few strong words, a bit of cheese, and a barrel of ale.
Well, now, that is where I beg to differ from you, sir, for they seem to have taken a powerful dislike to us.
Oh, you distress me, Lieutenant. How can this be? Are we not
not their liberators?
Well, I think it's on account of the way that we've been liberating their food and drink. It hasn't exactly given them a taste for revolution in the French style, and I can't say I blame them for that. If they ever did hate the English, as any sane man must, why, they hate the French a lot more after the short acquaintance they've had of them.
Oh, I have a problem, monsieur, with one of my young ladies. She still is sick from the voyage, I think, but has now gone into the hysterics. Where is it you keep your arm, my medicine?
I am engaged in conducting a military campaign, madame, not running an apothecary for a whorehouse.
I mean the doctor, idiot. What is this?
Lieutenant St. Ledger thinks we're in South Wales.
Well, there are an awful lot of Welsh people who have been thinking that for a long time now. Have you changed the name of the place already?
Well, there you are. You see, that's what they've been saying all the time. It is Wales we're in, I tell you. I'm resigning me commission here and now, and that's an end to it.
Oh, there is a girl again. Monsieur, where is your doctor, please?
Lord, this is more than a man can stand. I am going for a stroll to clear my head. Kindly await my return, sir.
Sir!
Oh, upon my word, we are surrounded.
What is it now?
Redcoats, all over the hills.
Holy Mother of God. What? The English army, is it?
Where is the English army? I cannot see them.
Oh, on the hills there, look. Oh, my God, you can see the bloody red coats and the black shackles they wear. Oh, Jesus, there's another share of them on the hill opposite. They'll never believe me when I tell them I've handed in me resignation. You'll have to be a witness for me, missus.
This is what comes of deserting your men, Lieutenant, in a time of crisis. They have fled in the face of the enemy.
But I left them dug in and the Sergeant Major in charge, and we hadn't seen any sight of the enemy.
How many are there, do you think? A score or so? What do you say, Lieutenant? An advance patrol?
I'd not care to venture an opinion, seeing as I am no longer a military man.
Madame Thomas, are these English soldiers over there, madame? Where is she?
Do not trouble me with your women. I cannot be bothered with trivialities.
But this is not the triviality, imbecile. This is the prisoner we lost. Where is she?
Is that the one you mean there, running across the yard?
Stop her, idiot. Do not let her go away. She will tell them how it is with us. Run after her. Monsieur Tate, wake for me, the sentinel. Send them after her.
The complicated military dispositions I'm about to describe took place on the hills above Trehowel, and as they are the nearest thing you are likely to get to a battle, you'd better pay close attention.
Oh, God, don't let them catch me.
They begin with the escape of Nancy Thomas from the enemy headquarters, hotly pursued by units of the French infantry.
Not sensible.
Oh, yes, sorry. In the interests of comprehension and to avoid the effort of translation, we will imagine them speaking in English, insofar as they are able.
Oh, Marcel, this is folly. It is a big mistake to run up the hill on a full stomach.
I explained this to the mad Irishman, but he will not listen to me.
We will never catch her. She climbs like the goat.
Oh, I cannot run anymore. I'm going to shoot her.
You cannot shoot her, Marcel.
This is true. You'd better shoot her, Emilio. You're a better shot.
I mean you cannot shoot a woman.
Who says this? Always you are making the new rules, Emile. Life is difficult already without the rules about not shooting the women.
Wait. There's a patrol. See? Ahead of her. They will stop her.
But they do not see her.
Hey, citizens! See the woman there! She is a prisoner! Stop her!
Oh, they see her. Thank God. I am exhausted. I think I'm going to be sick.
I told you it was a mistake to cook the chickens in all that butter. It is too much grease on the stomach.
But I love butter. Oh, God. Have they caught her?
No, but they will. See, they are crossing the ridge ahead of her. They will stop her. Do not worry yourself. Marcel, better to be sick, huh, than to try and hold it back. My God, who are those men there?
Oh, God, what is it now?
See, Marcel! Look, there!
They are the peasants. Forget about them.
But they have guns, Marcel. Look! Oh, my God! Our men have not seen them!
Fire your gun to warn them, Emil.
In point of fact, and as a matter of historical record, they were not peasants at all, but our gallant navvies from the Smalls Reef, hastily armed by Engineer Whitesides and reinforced by a party of seamen and formed into a military unit, in a manner of speaking.
This way, love! Over here! Oh, Christ, they shot her!
No, she'll be all right. She's just gone arse over tits.
Get down to her, Jerry. Rest of you, form up.
Patrick, get back here.
There's more of them coming up the hill.
Never mind them. There's only the pair of them. It's that lot over there I'm worried about.
I hope they've seen us.
Here they come, lads. Oh. Fire! Fire!
The Battle of Carngowil merits only a small note in the margin of military history. Yet it was a significant milestone, marking the last engagement to be fought on the soil of mainland Britain with the troops of a foreign power. It is also widely believed to be the first and only engagement between the French army and a gang of British navvies. The outcome was a decisive defeat for the army. The French losses were recorded as one dead and two wounded. The remainder, fleeing back to Tyrowel as if the devil himself was after them, watched with some trepidation by their commander-in-chief. It is said that his observation of the steadfast and courageous behaviour of a band of civilian volunteers, compared with the shameful performance of his own troops, had a decisive effect upon his subsequent morale.
If this is the way your citizen army comports itself in battle, madame, I suggest we negotiate an immediate ceasefire.
On the field of Carngowil, reeking of slaughter and triumph, the victorious army was congratulated by our heroine, Nancy Thomas.
Oh, are you the British army, then, that's come to rescue us?
No, love, we're in the building trade.
You saw them from the house with their red coats and tall black hats.
Oh, that'll be them Judies over there.
I beg your pardon?
Them women over there, standing there gawking. They've got red shawls over their shoulders and them big black hats they wear.
Oh, my goodness. So that's what they were, and the French thinking they were regular soldiers. Yeah. Of course, that's a panic, I can tell you. That's how I came to slip away without being noticed.
Well, as far as we know, miss, there's not a regular soldier within miles of here. Only those fools in the militia, and they're just marching round in circles.
Oh, there's my friend Mona Williams with them. Hey, Mona! Mona, it's me, Nancy!
It is also a matter of historical record that a large number of women from Fishguard and the surrounding area were in occupation of the hilltops round Tryowel, the better to see what was going on, and the better, alas, to be seen by the French soldiers. For which reason, though it shames me to have to admit it, they were attired in their Sunday best of bright red shawls and black bonnets.
Nancy! Oh! I thought they'd killed you when I heard Tryowel was taken on her. Was that you we saw running up the hill with the soldiers after you?
It was, and I thought they were going to catch me too. Oh. But these men came to my rescue.
Oh. What are you doing here, Mona Williams, when you should be somewhere safe? Where's Mr. Williams and the children?
It isn't safe anywhere with the French running wild all over the place. But I left the children with their granddad in Fishguard, and Mr. Williams has volunteered for the militia, daft bugger. But I came out here with the rest of the ladies to see what was going on.
And you all dressed up in your Sunday best. Did you know they've taken you for the English army? Terrified out of their wits they are.
Never. Oh, is that what it is then? And we were only saying it's a wonder none of them's come up here to have a closer look at us.
Mona Williams, you should be ashamed of yourself. Closer look indeed. Here we are, invaded by foreigners, and you're all dressed up like a dog's dinner, so you can impress them. And all of you with husbands at home.
Yes, and where are they, these husbands? Most of them ran off to join the militia and still running, all the way to Cardiff.
Talking of running, have you heard anything about Mr. Latimer?
Your Mr. Latimer has run all the way to England with the rest of the county set.
Oh.
The road south is full of their coaches, aye. And when it is all over, back they'll come asking us for the rent arrears, same as ever.
Madame said you had abandoned me, and it seems she was right. Maybe she's right about a lot of other things as well.
Hey, who is this Madame and she's about? The cat's mother, is it?
Never mind. Hey, babe, but what were you saying about the militia? Isn't there any soldiers here to defend us at all?
Oh, not proper soldiers, only the yeomanry from Castle Martin. They came into Fishguard this morning to say they're waiting for reinforcements. Squire Campbell is in charge, and he and the other officers have all taken over the Royal Oak, and they sit around smoking and drinking and deliberating while the French run riot all over Pencaya.
Well, maybe it is right to be cautious, I mean, with so many of them, and wait until the English army gets here.
Cautious, do you say? Oh, it's fine to be cautious when it's not your stock that's being eaten. Wait for the English army, indeed. Is no one from South Wales bold enough to put a rabble of Frenchmen to flight? And a sorrier-looking bunch of vagabonds you never did see. Why, Jemima Nicholas brought 12 of them in at the point of a pitchfork after she found them chasing the goats around the farmyard, and not one of them with as much fight as a spring chicken.
What, Jemima Nicholas from Carnfechan? All by yourself, 12 of them?
With a pitchfork, aye. They came marching into Fishguard with her behind them, drunk as lords and singing away. Well, I say marching. It was like dancing. I tell you, Nancy, they're only waiting to surrender, most of them, and find themselves a cozy little prison somewhere for the rest of the war.
How many women have you got here, then?
Well, there's about 50 of us here, and the same again over Bingy Hill, see?
Right, let's get over to them. I've got an idea. And if it works, we'll show the men of South Wales what a few women can do with a bit of imagination.
Yeah. What in God's name are they up to?
Don't ask me, Governor. I think they've gone daft.
Well, go down and ask them, then. Don't just stand there gawking.
Oh, give us a break, boss. We've not stopped since we left the Smalls. My feet are killing me.
They marched all the way down that bit of hill, and now they're up at the top of it again. I never saw them climbing back up, though.
Well, perhaps it's a different lot of women. They all look the same with them red cloaks on.
Maybe it is. But where did the other lot go, then?
Hey, up. They're off again. Down the flaming hill.
What the hell are they up to?
Well, the women of Pengyre were only 100 or so in number, but their tactics enjoyed considerably more success than those of the king's unlamented brother, though in truth they were remarkably similar in nature. Witnessed only by the incredulous navvies, they marched from the top of Bigney Hill to the bottom, turned along a narrow lane hidden from the sight of the enemy by a tall hedgerow, and made their way to the back of the hill, marched up to the top and then down again, thus giving a totally wrong impression to the enemy at Trehawel.
Citizens, it is apparent that several regiments of regular infantry have arrived to reinforce the local garrison. I have no alternative save unconditional surrender.
On the morning of Thursday, the 24th of February, the Black Legion marched onto Goodick Sands east of Fishguard and laid down its arms. A formal gesture of surrender, witnessed from the surrounding hilltops by units of volunteer militia and the local population, who, when it was safe to do so, came down for a closer look. And the enemy had a closer look at them.
But these are not the English soldiers.
I assure you, madame, we were surrounded by redcoats.
And you see who it is who wears these redcoats, monsieur. Regardez là. You are defeated by a regiment of women.
If I believe that, madame, I would take the only course open to a man of honor and a member of the North Carolina Order of the Cincinnati.
You already surrender your sword, monsieur. So how is it you can fall upon it? Ah, imbecile. You have no need to kill yourself. Me, I do the killing for you.
Was the dignity of this solemn occasion marred by the volatile temper of an enraged Frenchwoman, who fell upon the enemy commander-in-chief and soundly boxed his ears.
Nancy, look at the way she's setting about him. Is he her husband, you think?
No, she's not very much in favor of husbands, and I can't say I blame her.
Compensation! I demand compensation! Have you seen what they have done to my house? Drunk all the brandy they have!
Why is Mr. Latimer? And in a fine state by the look of him.
Devoured all my food! Slaughtered my chickens! What is the country coming to? Whatever do we pay taxes for if not for protection? Where is the commanding officer? I demand compensation! They were the best layers in Pembrokeshire!
So you come back, have you?
Why, Mrs. Thomas... My dear, I am glad to see you are safe. I was worried about you. I trust you have not been inconvenienced as I have.
Inconvenienced, is it? Worried about me, were you? Not so worried to stay and make sure I was all right. Running away to England and coming back when it was all over, bar the shouting.
It is not running away I have been. I will have you know, Mrs. Thomas, that I have been scouring the county for militia to protect us, and would have gladly volunteered to join them, had I been able to find them. Besides, this is no way to speak to your intended.
Well, I might have been your intended once, Mr. Latimer, but I am not anymore.
What are you talking about? Your arrangements have all been made. Whatever do you mean, woman?
I mean I'm not going to be marrying you. I have found I can manage very well on my own, thank you very much. And I will send you some of my hens as compensation.
Oh, that woman is out of her senses. Compensation? I'll sue the government for every penny. We pay good taxes for protection, and what do they give us? Where is the commanding officer?
Oh, Nancy, love, that was well spoken. But will you really be able to manage by yourself, do you think?
We can drive the French off our lands without the help of husbands. We can farm them for ourselves, too, and maybe make a better job of it.
The immediate fate of the Black Legion was indeed prison. But they did not remain there very long. A number of them contrived to dig a tunnel from Pembroke Jail and escape to France in a captured vessel, the luxury yacht of the Lord Cawdor.
They've stolen my wee boat and all my Scotch whiskey aboard. What in God's name do we have a navy for? Traitors, all of them. It's a conspiracy. I'll hang the lot of them.
Serves you right if you ask me. Where were you when you were needed and the French army lay in waste at Friaul? Drinking you a Scotch whiskey, I'll be bound, and letting the rest of us be plundered.
Open for me that other bottle, Emile. It is a strange liqueur, but very powerful. I think I may grow to like it.
Don't drink too much, Marcel. You will be sick.
Desirous of avoiding further villainy and the cost of keeping them in prison, the authorities sent the rest of the Black Legion back to France in British ships, and their officers with them.
I fear it is an ignominious ending, gentlemen, to a promising enterprise.
Ah, well, we have had the honor of invading England, even if it was only Wales, and that's more than many a soldier can lay claim to when all is said and done.
Indeed, sir, I have written another page of history. Though I fear I may be reaching the final chapter.
So ended the last invasion of Britain. But Colonel Tate was not quite finished with history, nor history with him. In 1809, at the age of 83, he became the subject of a police dossier for his wild and extravagant lifestyle while living in Paris with a young lady 50 years his junior, and for attempting to pay off his gambling debts by inventing an engine of war, which he claimed
can demolish an entire city in one almighty conflagration.
The patent for which he offered to his creditors, who, desirous of avoiding an accidental explosion, paid his debts and packed him off to America to help in the forthcoming war between the United States and England. History does not record what part he played in the subsequent burning of the White House.
He stuck a feather in his hat and called it macaroni.
As for Madame, rumour has it that she settled down in South Wales and married a clergyman. But I find it hard to believe that any man would have her.
Monsieur, what are you doing out there? Talking to yourself again, is it now? Come into the house immediately, if you please. I wish to speak with you concerning this habit you have of leaving the boots before the fire.
Coming, my dear. I've nearly finished.
Immediately, please, monsieur, or I'll throw them on it.
Yankee Doodle, keep it up. Yankee Doodle, dandy. Mind the music.
So ends the remarkable story of the Black Legion, as recalled by the Reverend Daniel Rowlands, one-time vicar of Llanfi Anglo-Penabont, in the year of our Lord, 1857.
The Legion of the Lost was written by Paul Bryars. The narrator was Peniel Evans. Colonel Tate was played by David Healy, Nancy, Zila Clark, St. Ledger, Brian Murray, and Madame, Maggie McCarthy. Carnot, Knox, and Latimer, Gordon DeLue. Marcel, Olivier Pierre, and Emile, William Hope. Pat, Robert Hamilton, and Jerry, Philip Fox. Antoine and Cawdor, Arnold Diamond. Mona, Helena Breck. Tone and Whitesides, Joe Dunlop. And Osh, Colin Starkey. The play was directed by Terry Cookson.
Robert Hamilton is a National Theatre player.